From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Since May, Amtrak trains on the Lincoln service, connecting Chicago with Bloomington, Springfield, and St. Louis, have been running at speeds of up to 110 miles per hour. Up until recently, they were running at up to 90 miles an hour. That is, when they aren't sitting on a siding, running at 0 miles per hour, waiting for a freight train to lumber past. Getting this high-speed rail in motion took 8 years of construction and another 5 years of testing. The occasion was cause for celebration among Illinois' political leaders. Here are some of them talking in June at a news conference at Union Station.
With this final piece of the transition to high speed, we've cut down on the travel times and boosted safety, reliability, and convenience along the way.
We all know that Illinois is a railroad-centric state, maybe more than any other state in the country. And this is a capstone now for passenger service.
This is a defining moment in not just moving people, but moving our entire state forward.
That was Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, and before that, Governor J.B. Pritzker and former U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood. The faster service is being touted as high-speed rail, but compare the new speeds of Amtrak's Chicago to St. Louis service trains to those in Europe that can and often do run at 200 miles per hour. Suddenly, Illinois' high-speed rail doesn't seem that fast at all. The new speeds are an improvement, but they've also shed some light on the state of rail travel in our country and how it could be better still. In July, we talked about this with Rick Harnish. He's executive director of the High Speed Rail Alliance. It's based out of Chicago. That organization actually started 30 years ago this year. Our entire program is on tape today, and because of that, we're not taking your calls live, but we do appreciate hearing from you all the same. You can email us at talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org. All right, Rick. You probably heard a little of my cynicism in the introduction there, but let's start with the optimistic note. What is Illinois getting right by making these changes?
Well, so the biggest issue, which is why we're national in scope as opposed to just Illinois, is the way that states, Amtrak, federal government, and privately owned railroads work together to run both freight and passenger trains. And we don't have a good mechanism for public investment in the kind of track that you need to do both freight and passenger right. And so that institutional learning that happened because of this project is incredibly important. Another big important piece here is the amount of work that was done to change the way the roads in every town interact with the railroad to make them much safer. So those are two things we should be doing across the entire state. I would like to see the road piece of it come more from our road budget than it did in this case. But this really is huge progress in learning how the state can work with the railroads who own most of the track.
Okay, maybe we can drill down on some of what those changes are. I used to live in downtown Springfield, right next to the tracks. Believe me, I heard the trains all day and night. And I could see this process of changing out the old wooden railroad ties with ones made of, I don't know, they look like concrete. A bunch of crossings were closed in that area. What are some of these infrastructure changes you're talking about that make these higher speeds possible?
So the track has to be more rigid and more stable than you need with a slow moving freight train. And so how do you create the payment structure that allows the railroad to keep those tracks up to a higher standard? So, the railroad went through and completely replaced all of the track from the ground up. And that's a really important development. The other big infrastructure piece is safer grade crossings. So there's new technology that is allowing the train to communicate with the grade crossing in order to make sure there's no car stuck on the tracks. That's also very important. And new trains are mostly here, but we're continuing to get new, much more modern trains than what we had before.
Okay, so those are some of the improvements. But I mentioned at the start, we're just getting 110 miles per hour of travel. Meanwhile, Europe, Japan, they've been running trains going almost 200 miles an hour for years, if not, I guess, decades, right? How did Illinois and the U.S. as a whole end up with a very different idea of what constitutes efficient high-speed rail travel?
For some reason in this country, we decided that the only truly valuable travel was by car, and that we should focus on building cities that allowed you to drive anywhere and park anywhere and pretend that all of that is free. And so we haven't figured out how to make the critical investments you need in railroads in order to make railroads an attractive way to ship both freight and to move passengers. So there's lots of little things that have happened that, you know, there's a lot of discussions out there now about maybe we need to rethink how we do city planning so that people can walk and be healthier and have healthier social relationships because you bump into each other when you're walking and you talk to each other. And it's part of this bigger puzzle of we decided for some reason, I don't know why, that if you wanted to get around, you have to own a car.
Yeah, we've had some of those conversations on the program. I'd refer listeners back to our segment on 15-minute cities, the idea of walkable or bikeable, everything you need within 15 minutes of your residence. And there will be more to come as well on, you know, the changes in urban planning. But, you know, what position do we put ourselves in by being so reliant on cars? What does that do to rail service? Or what has that done to rail service? Yeah.
Well, you know, we've got trains that connect most of the core places we need to connect to Chicago. So they exist, you know, Galesburg, Bloomington, Normal, Springfield, Champaign, Moline, Rockford, and then the cities that are the smaller towns that are in between. Those places are all incredibly important. You know, I'm sorry, I've started going into a list of all the colleges and all the tourist destinations and the hospitals and all of these things that are in those places that you need to be able to get people to from other cities. But the problem is that those trains aren't fast enough and they're not frequent enough to make it a truly attractive option. So it should be possible to walk from Illinois State to the Normal train station and catch a train every hour at Normal that takes you to the Loop and to O'Hare. It should be possible to do that in Champaign. It should be possible to do that in Peoria. That's when you really start to make a difference in how these cities attract jobs, how they attract workers, how they innovate. And a really hidden thing is, it's really, really expensive to provide highway and utility infrastructure for this spread out landscape that we have. It's incredibly expensive. And so we would have a healthier financial position in the state if we could switch people to cars. But it takes a true commitment to work with the railroads to figure out what tracks needed to be added so that you can run those trains every hour.
Switch people to trains. Yeah, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Rick Harnish, who's the executive director of the High Speed Rail Alliance, about this, what's being touted as high speed rail in Illinois on the Lincoln service between Chicago and St. Louis and points in between, but really pales in comparison to what other countries have done with high speed rail, particularly in Europe and Japan. Talk a little bit about Amtrak. Right, it's been around for more than 50 years now. Why has it failed to really establish itself as a practical transportation alternative?
Because Congress and the states have invested peanuts in making it work. And so you get what you pay for. And we're starting We've got another chance to change that dynamic with some provisions that were in the most recent federal infrastructure bill. There's going to be another fight this year about whether to fund Amtrak, even at what I consider to be peanuts, others consider to be a lot. But it really comes down to, if we want people to be able to take the train, to take the bus, to walk within their towns, you have to invest in the infrastructure that makes that work.
If you were made Midwest high-speed rail czar with a budget to match your vision, what sort of rail system would you create, right? I've seen maps that show sort of a lightning bolt, Chicago to Champaign to Springfield to St. Louis. What would you do? What would that take?
So the first thing I would do, and let's narrow this down to Illinois to make the discussion simpler.
Sure.
And then you take it up to a bigger level. But I would first say, what are the important connecting points? O'Hare, the Loop, Rockford, Springfield, Champaign, Bloomington Normal, et cetera, Carbondale. How do we connect all of those together with a package? You know, there really should be a high quality frequent bus service that makes the kind of circle around Quad Cities around to Danville. We need to build a new high-speed line where trains are going at least 200 miles an hour, at least from downtown Chicago to Springfield to East St. Louis. You need to have hourly service to Rockford and Galena, et cetera, hourly service to Moline. And then at those core connecting points, the buses and the trains need to connect so that people can easily go. For example, Southern Illinois has a major medical campus in Springfield, and their other campus is in Carbondale. If somebody could take a train that went in, you know, typical Amtrak speeds to East St. Louis, and then get on a high-speed train from East St. Louis to Springfield, now you've connected those two campuses together with an auto-competitive time, even though you're going out of the way. If you had all of this connecting to a core central point in Chicago where you had a train every 10 or 15 minutes from that core point to O'Hare, then you could take a train from all of these major cities to Chicago and go into O'Hare Airport, which would be huge.
There have been some efforts at new rail approaches in America, right? Brightline in Florida, there's a route working on in California. Are there American rail systems that, in your view, are on the right track, so to speak?
So we have three categories of track: shared use, which is most of the network. That's where freight trains and passenger trains are using the same track. Regional, which I'll get you, if somebody wants to know, they can call me. And then high speed line, where you're building completely new tracks to go 200 miles an hour. Brightline Florida has figured out the formula for doing shared use right. And when they opened between Orlando and Miami, and Americans from all around the country are riding those trains, they're going to get it better. The other is Brightline West, which will connect the LA suburbs to Las Vegas. That's the one that's most likely to have true high-speed trains in this decade. Again, that'll be a game changer. California is now doing it right. They made some errors because they were the first. They started this process decades ago. They made some errors that have kind of set them back, but now they've got the right kind of program that we need to learn a lot from. And then there's a high potential for Fort Worth, Dallas to Houston, that most of the design work has been done. And now it's a matter of figuring out how to pay for it.
We're almost out of time. I'm 46, assuming I'm graced with a normal lifespan. Will I be riding true high-speed rail in the Midwest in my lifetime?
If the community leaders throughout the state say that we need to commit to this, then yes, we can. But it really comes from business leaders, elected leaders, in hundreds of towns saying, I want an integrated network of high-speed and regional trains and inner-city buses that connects the entire state. If we have that, it can happen.
That was Rick Harnish with the High Speed Rail Alliance. I spoke with him in July. Let us know what you think about what we've been talking about today or any topic in the past. 217-300-2121 is the number. 217-300-2121. Coming up after a short break, Toya Wolf, author of the award-winning novel Last Summer on State Street. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.